You're listening to an Insurance Journal podcast sponsored by CoreLogic. Today's expert is Daniel Betton. Daniel is a principal research scientist for CoreLogic. He's responsible for meteorological science as it relates to the CoreLogic suite of verification products for hail and wind. He's a self-proclaimed problem solver with more than 9 years of experience in the field of meteorology. And here's a fun fact. When he was undertaking his PhD, he took part in 8 different scientific field projects that collected observations in tornadoes, hailstorms, and hurricanes. And all this sounds like really dangerous to me, anyway. Daniel Betton, welcome to Insurance Journal.
Thank you for having me on.
Daniel, I got to say, as I read through your bio, and I mean this in only the most complimentary way, okay, you're kind of a weather geek.
Oh, yeah. You don't get into weather unless you love weather. I knew from when I was 10, 12 years old I wanted to do weather, and then by high school I knew I wanted to get my PhD. But, you know, when you find something you love and you have the skills to do it, then you know, it's a great match.
Absolutely.
Really,
absolutely. Well, it is fortuitous that we have a weather geek, because the topic today is weather verification for the modern insurance industry. So, perfect. I'll jump right into the first question, okay? A really basic question, and that is, why are weather verification products even necessary to the current insurance industry?
So weather, you know, as we know, affects almost every part of our lives. You know, whether we're going outside, you know, what plans we decide to make, and so it also, therefore, impacts every type of insurance policy, not just, you know, car insurance of hail damaging your car or damaging your roof or tornado or severe winds or hurting your house, but even in healthcare, you know, how cold it is outside, whether there's snow or, you know, it's a heat wave, impacts every type.
Sure.
And so, you know, there's a real cost because it's deriving so much of the insurance losses in the country. There's a real cost to being reactive to this impactful weather versus being proactive and getting ahead. And whether it's trying to estimate the number of adjusters you're sending out or how much cash reserves to hold back, you know, to pay for a particular event, there's a real cost to that. And so it's why CoreLogic has gotten into this game and trying to help, you know, provide another tool to help insurers.
Makes sense. Next question for you. Given the need to understand, like, historical weather footprints, why are the public reports insufficient, like not enough to meet the needs of insurers?
So, you know, because insurers want to be proactive, historically they've tried to rely on public reports to give them at least some information about what kind of storms, you know, impacted their policies. But the problem is, with any individual report, you don't know if that report represents a storm hitting 500 homes or 5,000 homes. You can look at the number of reports in a little area, but that's going to be highly dependent on the population. If there's a lot of people around, you'll get a lot more reports. And if there's not as many people around, or they're all working, or it's in the middle of the night and everybody's asleep, you won't get as many reports. So there's a lot of things, you know, you have to take into account. You also have to understand that the quality of reports can vary greatly depending on who's submitting the report. So there's a lot of people that they're either volunteers or they work in emergency management, and they go through a training program in the National Weather Service to be trained weather spotters. They get a certification, and they go through all this training to understand how to properly measure hailstones, how to estimate wind speeds based on damage, you know, that sort of thing. And so if those kind of people are submitting reports, and you can be rest assured that there's pretty high quality. But then a lot of other people also submit reports, whether they're storm chasers or people just in the public, people who haven't gone through the training yet, and you don't know whether that report is coming from somebody who's been trained or somebody who's just calling in. So the quality can vary greatly depending on who's reporting.
That makes sense. What did you call it? A trained weather spotter?
Trained weather spotter. Yeah, there's a class, and they go on, I think, at every weather service office. They train whoever wants to go. Most of it are off-duty firefighters and other people working in emergency management. So that, because a lot of times they'll act as spotters, they'll go out and look at the storms, and then they'll make reports trying to help improve warnings that are out there and that kind of thing. And the Weather Service provides that, you know, because they want people to be giving them information and, you know, to improve the warnings, but then they also want people to submit reports so that they know how well the warnings are verifying. And sometimes they'll even call people, if it's pretty rural area, they'll call people to try to figure out whether, you know, if they said in the warning there'd be baseball size hail, whether the estimates they were giving out were correct. And so a lot of times the rural areas, the reports are actually dependent on the Weather Service calling people. And they'll a lot of times just stop as soon as they find one or two reports to kind of verify that warning.
It's always like baseball-sized hail or golf ball size. Why isn't it like kiwi or lemon-sized hail? What's up with that?
I don't know exactly how they decided, you know, what objects are, you know, the only ones to use. But, you know, they kind of decided at one point, you know, in the past that, you know, we'll use baseball size, we'll use softballs, we'll use golf ball-sized hail as these kind of indicators. And a lot of people just eyeball, you know, that's generally baseball size hail. And if they're not going out and measuring it, then there's, you know, could be quite a bit of difference between what one person says is baseball and what another person says is baseball.
Sure. Sure. Or whether it's melted a little bit, and I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, that also plays into it, that, you know, when you, if the storm had been producing, you know, a tornado, you might be in your tornado shelter and you know, wait to go run out and measure the hail sensor. It could be there sitting there for 30 minutes, slowly melting, and so it might have fallen as a baseball, but then you might measure a golf ball because it was melting. So things like that can definitely influence the reported size of hailstones.
So what is it about CoreLogic's approach that makes it unique?
So the kind of motivation to move beyond reports, you know, primarily, you know, is that you just don't get the coverage information from public reports that you need to be able to accurately estimate things like potential number of claims impacted by a particular event. And so to start understanding the coverage of a particular storm, you start using radar data. So Weather Service put out a network of radars across the whole country. They cover the far majority of the population, and because they're remotely sensing the atmosphere, they're measuring quantities in the storm at a distance, somebody doesn't have to be underneath the storm.
Mm-hmm.
And the National Severe Storm Lab developed an algorithm called the hail detection algorithm that was designed to help forecasters understand how big of hail a storm can produce. So if the Weather Service is trying to issue a warning out in some rural area where somebody's not spotting, you know, then they need an estimate of what kind of hail it could be producing to put in the warning, because, mm-hmm, you know, they want to tell people it's going to be baseball-sized hail or, you know, whether it's going to be like pea-sized hail. You know, so that algorithm was developed as a way to introduce radar data into estimating hail sizes on the ground. The problem is that those estimates are, one, for the Weather Service for forecasting rather than trying to estimate what actually occurred. And two, it's not trying to take advantage of public reports. It's not trying to take advantage of just the radar data at the low, near the ground, which is often, because it's closest to the ground, it's more likely to correlate with the hail that's falling near the ground. And so the way CoreLogic approaches hail and wind as well is we want to use the lowest radar data available, and then we want to combine as many different types of data sources as possible. So that includes public reports, but it also includes scanning through social media on Twitter or Facebook, you know, things like that.
Sure.
To increase, you know, augment the number of reports so we're getting the most information as possible.
Smart. You know, beyond just the claim adjustment verification aspects, are there other indirect applications for weather verification products?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, the most obvious is when you're adjusting the claim, you obviously care about, you know, what size hail probably fell at that property, you know, yesterday, you know, if the storm was then. But if we have a history of the hail sizes for, you know, 5, 10 years, then we can tell whether the hail damage that they're seeing on the ground is from the current storm, or whether it's from a storm that's far back in the past. So it's kind of like the easiest thing, you know, is to figure out which storm that damage is associated with. But the kind of more interesting, I guess, application for me, being a meteorologist, is how can we apply this high-resolution, consistent coverage data set to risk models? So trying to understand future risk for hail and for wind or even tornadoes in the future. So I'm actually working with several groups. One group we have that does deterministic modeling. So that's trying to figure out like the annual likelihood of damaging hail occurring in a residence. And it's important to use this kind of forensic data because if you use just public reports, you end up just seeing these bullseyes around cities. So then you have to smooth out the data so that you don't see the bullseyes. And when you do that, then you kind of lose the higher resolution information. And so we're also applying that to catastrophe modeling. So, and it's kind of like the same benefit, but catastrophe modeling is looking at, you know, what's the worst case scenario? You know, all these different storms going on at the same time. You know, what is the exposure to the insurer? What's the worst kind of event that they might, you know, expect for an individual year? And we're using the same kind of data to improve those kind of models. Which is, I think, is even more impactful because these storms, even though they occur relatively frequently, their location, there's a lot of randomness to that. So the storm, you know, three storms might have hit, you know, north of, you know, a large metropolitan area, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it didn't hit. They wouldn't in the future hit the major city.
You had mentioned tornado, and mm-hmm. and you guys, you currently do the forensic verification for hail and wind. I thought you were about to maybe give us a little sneak peek into what the future might hold.
Actually,
you willing?
Yeah, sure. So we're actually working on a tornado footprint model. It's not going to be, you know, super super detailed because tornadoes can impact, you know, they can be as wide as 50 yards, it, you know, it'd be impractical to try to retrieve it on that scale. But certainly, you know, insurers are trying to figure out, you know, when a tornado hits, whether it hit 500 homes, you know, or 5,000 homes. And, you know, that's the kind of information we're trying to get, you know, in the same real-time sense, you know, within, and you know, 1 to 2 hours, whether this was a tornado that's going to cause them billions of dollars in damage or, you know, a few million dollars in damage. That's one thing. And being kind of a severe weather geek, you know, in my case, lots of tornadoes. Like, that's the thing that, one of the things that most attracted me here, that, you know, to work on something fun like that. But we're also working on using our advanced flood modeling capabilities. We have a number of flood risk models that we're really well known for, and we're trying to reapply those models to flash flood footprints. So, in real time, trying to figure out where flash flooding could be occurring. I'm trying to depict that. So it's another area that we're interested in. And then winter storms is kind of, would kind of complete all the different weather perils. So looking at where snow fell and ice accumulating, and a lot of the stuff can be provided by the weather service. But then when you really try to get down to whether there's a risk for snow loads to collapse roofs or ice damming, on rooftops, that kind of thing, trying to drill down to that. And then if we can provide all that, then CoreLogic feels like we can, you know, provide a kind of comprehensive forensic weather suite.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This has been really informative to me, and I know it will be to our listeners as well. I really appreciate you being with us, Daniel.
Yeah, no problem.